Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa, the center of Ames, the center of it all. Yes, it is. Well, I mentioned we talk about food and farming. We're going to talk more about that. And even though consumers are paying more for food this year, almost none of that increase is being passed on to American family farmers and ranchers.
Although it's been a good year for farm prices,
Good year for farm prices, but when you kind of look at what exactly the farmers get, it's pretty skimpy there. So what is fair for a farmer? I'm going to start the show here with a reading. It's a poem. It's a short story. It's a little vignette here from a collection of poems, gathered by Garrison Keillor, and he has generally a good ear for these sort of things. And this is a little thing called Soybeans by the author Thomas Allen Orr. The October air was warm and musky, blowing over brown fields, heavy with the fragrance of freshly combined beans, the breath of harvest. He was pulling a truckload onto the scales at the elevator near the rail siding north of town when a big Cadillac drove up. A man stepped out. Wearing a three-piece suit and a gold pinky ring, the man said he had just invested $100,000 in soybeans and wanted to see what they look like. The farmer stared at the man and was quiet, reaching for the tobacco in his rear pocket of his jeans, where he wore his only ring, a threadbare circle rubbed by working cans of dip. And long hours on the backside of a 100-acre run, he scooped up a handful of small white beans, the pearls of the prairie, saying, "Soybeans look like a foot of water in the field in April when you're ready to plant and can't get in. Like three kids at the kitchen table eating macaroni and cheese five nights in a row. Or like a broken part on the combine when your credit with the implement dealer is nearly tapped. Soybeans look like prayers bouncing off the ceiling when prices on the Chicago grain market start to drop. Or like your old man's tears when you tell him how much the land might bring for subdivisions. Soybeans look like the first good night of sleep in weeks when you finally unload at the elevator and the kids get Christmas." He spat a little juice on the tire of the Cadillac, laughing despite himself and saying to the man, "Now, maybe you can tell me what $100,000 looks like." A little thought there from the author Thomas Allen Orr. Joining us at our kitchen table today is Aaron Lehman. Welcome, Aaron.
Well, it's good to be here.
Good.
Well, we've asked Aaron to speak to us because he is the president of the Iowa Farmers Union. Now, and Aaron, you can distinguish that from the Farm Bureau for us, if you would, please. What is the difference in these organizations?
Well, it's a good question. The Iowa Farmers Union is actually the oldest general farm organization in Iowa. We've been around since 1915. And since our inception, we've been working for family farming. That's family-sized agriculture. And we put an emphasis on that because we know our landscape is better when it's farmed by family farmers. We know that our communities are stronger when our land is farmed by family farmers. We know our economy is stronger when it is controlled by family farmers. So that's the whole basis for our organization.
And you are a family farmer, right?
I am. I farm in northern Polk County.
With your father, with your sons, with your daughters, with what? What's the family?
Yes. Yeah, I got started farming with my father, and now it's my son and I farming just outside Allaman.
Aha, okay. And any daughters that want to farm?
I have a daughter who's living off the farm now, but she's very involved in the farm operation and very and tied to it emotionally just as much as the rest of us.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. So was it last weekend already, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago? When was the conference? Lana and I went to the Iowa Farmers Union Conference and thoroughly enjoyed ourselves. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we had a great time gathering. We were in Marshalltown on December 2nd and 3rd.
Well, Ricardo Salvador, who used to be an ISU, I believe, agronomy professor, right, and now runs works at the Union of Concerned Scientists, was your main speaker, and he did a bang-up job talking about, which means he lives in Washington, D.C., I guess, talking about what the Farm Bill, well, it's a mystery what it's going to be, but maybe you can give us some insight into things that Ricardo said, or...
Well, we're here to talk about fairness.
Oh, yeah. Right. I launched
Absolutely.
Right into the Farm Bill. But Lana's got this wonderful chart that the Farmers Union published called The Farmer's Share.
Yeah, this comes out every year somehow. The Farmers, the Iowa Farmers Union distributes this. It's put out by the National Farmers Union. Oh, and it has pictures, of course, of things that we might find in our grocery cart. And it's surprising what things are, what the price of things are. And underneath it, it has what the farmers get. It's pretty amazing. Everybody's talking about the rise of food prices this year. For instance, there's some...
Look at bacon.
Bacon. Well, that's a good thing to look at. Retail, $5.33. What the farmer gets is... 84 cents, okay? And here's another one. Tomatoes, retail, $4.59. Farmer, 36 cents. Eggs, $1.79. Farmer, 48 cents. Milk, retail, $4.59 a gallon. Farmers, $1.55. What do these prices tell you, Aaron?
Well, while the price of food continues to go up and our consumers are feeling the pinch, those dollars are not making their way all the way down to the farm. In fact, if you average it out, farmers are getting less of the food dollar than they ever have. Less than 15 cents out of every food dollar reaches the farmer. And that's because there is so much in between the consumer and the farmer that are controlling the process and controlling our food system. And as a result, the farmers don't benefit and the consumers don't benefit.
So who's benefiting? Where is that money going?
More and more of the money is going into the processing and the distribution and advertising and packaging of our food. And the real problem in that situation is there are fewer and fewer multinational agribusinesses that control those steps in between the farmer and the consumer.
Yeah, well, we're getting into a new era of sort of, trust busting, they used to call it. But, like, in the last few weeks, was it Albertsons? A very major, two major food stores were going to combine to buy each other out. And they've put a stop to it, or at least they're questioning it on the federal level. That's a good thing for consumers, apparently. Might be a good thing for farmers, too, right?
Oh, definitely. You know, the consolidation in our food system is happening for the products farmers buy. to put a crop in, the products farmers sell, and from every step along the way. And that last step, our grocery stores, is more consolidated than ever. And, you know, when we go into the grocery store shelves, we see items and items and items, and we think, oh, all the selection. And we kind of get the impression that, well, that means there's a lot of competition between this item on the shelf and this item on the shelf. That's really not the case. So many of those items on the shelf are owned and controlled by the same companies, even though there's a different name on this product or a different name on that product. There's lots of selection between names of different foods, but who's actually controlling those foods? It's still only a handful, just less than five, that really control the food that's on the shelf.
Yeah, I've seen these diagrams, you know, like a tree that shows which large, like, who does Unilever own and who does, what are some of the other big companies? You're right, Aaron, there's only four or five of them, and they really do control what they call grocery stores are described like this. What's on the periphery, which means usually meat and dairy and things like that, and then what's in the center aisle, all those things in cans and boxes, and it's all has a lot of corn and soybeans in it, for one thing, I guess, but it's all made by the same companies.
That's true. There's another little fact from this Farmer's Share sheet here. For a 18-ounce box of cereal, if retail we pay $3.49 for that, it says here the Farmer's Share is 5 cents. How can the farmer make anything off of that? Or here, another one. I like this. A bagel, a 1.4-ounce bagel might cost us 90 cents and the farmer gets 1 cent. It's kind of hard to fill up a tractor and plant the seeds for that sort of thing. And soda. Don't forget that soda is, well, I suppose that's a big
corn syrup.
We should be proud of the soda we put here. If we pay $1.19 for a 2-liter bottle of soda, the farmer gets 5 cents. Something's not right here. This is not right. How can farmers afford to keep producing at these levels? It seems kind of slim to me, Aaron.
Yeah, the farmers' margins are just getting tighter and tighter. In fact, you know, the amount of that farmers are going to have to spend this year to get a crop in the ground in 2023 is also at an all-time high, because it's translated not to just higher input costs, fertilizer, seed, pesticides, insecticides, that type of thing, but in addition to that, most farmers are dealing with, if they're renting land, the land is more expensive to rent than it's been in a long, long time. If a farmer is lucky enough to find some land that they would want to buy, prices are extremely high there. It's a really expensive crop we're putting in the ground, and these are very expensive animals that we're going to be bringing to market too.
Well, so that's where the government subsidies come in, right?
Well, and that's where our discussion of the Farm Bill goes. Mm-hmm. That's right. We're every 5 years or so, we pass farm policy in this country. It's called the Farm Bill, but it's not just about farming. But it deals with farm subsidies and farm programs at its core. In addition to conservation programs, nutrition programs, all sorts of other things related to farming are discussed in the 5-year Farm Bill.
And the Farmers Union is a very active lobbying group, right? You guys get political.
We do. We do. We send our farmers to Washington, D.C. every year, along with farmers from around the country, and we talk directly to our lawmakers, and we talk directly to the agencies that deal with agriculture, USDA, Department of Justice, the Federal Trade Commission. We get involved because we want our farmers to have a voice.
That's good, because so many of us may be a little leery about, oh, people don't want to talk about politics. Like at the table, you don't want to talk about religion or politics. But actually, I think it was said at the conference a couple weeks ago that politics is the way we allocate resources, and nothing could be more important than how we allocate our food production system. It sounds pretty amazing to have this going on. Does the Farmers Union, do you feel you're having any impact?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think we are. And, you know, we have our experience this past year and in previous years is that we are certainly a respected voice when we can bring the story of the farm directly to policymakers. And we have a very well-respected government relations team in Washington, D.C. that helps connect the farmers of the organization with the policymakers. And this past time we sent farmers to Washington, we got to meet the members of Congress in person themselves, five out of six offices, and in every office we also met with their staff members. It's a great way to make a difference, to bring that farmer voice when it comes to policy development.
So do you meet with the members of the Senate Ag Committee and the House Ag Committee, or the just the senators from Iowa, for example? Or,
well, we're actually there with about 400 farmers on a typical year, 400 farmers from around the country.
Wow.
So we all first talk to our own senators and representatives, but we also talk to every member of the Ag Committee, every member in the House, every member in the Senate, and then we talk to members of Congress who are not from our home area. For some areas, we also reach out to some of those representatives where there isn't a large farmers union presence, maybe some urban lawmakers, maybe some lawmakers from other corners of the country.
People who want to eat, right?
Yes, we all want to eat. We all want healthy, safe, nutritious food. And that's what really unites us.
So there is the committee, the Ag Committee in the Senate and in the House, and tell us how that works, that we actually get a farm bill written. What happens?
Yeah, it is the charge of the agriculture committees, both in the House and the Senate. Sometimes one starts, sometimes the other one starts. And they are listening to all sorts of interests at this point. Some of them are going to be dealing with conservation issues, some nutrition issues. They'll be listening to farm groups like us, and they'll be trying to piece together what needs to take place in this coming farm bill discussion. And it's super important this year. We've been through a lot in agriculture, and we really need to have a farm bill that is transformational.
In terms of environment, why is this year outstanding?
Well, for a couple of reasons. If you know, we've been through a pandemic that really laid bare the vulnerabilities in our food system. Sometimes it's the vulnerabilities with our food workers who were mistreated or had very little power to improve their working conditions in the food system. Sometimes it's empty shelves on the grocery store and price spikes mm-hmm. because only a couple people controlled the food that was available. Sometimes it was the supply chains bringing supplies to farmers. But if anything, the pandemic showed us is that it is our food system is extremely vulnerable, and we have to make the investments that strengthen that for farmers, consumers, and for our land and rural communities.
So what sort of things could go in the Farm Bill that would accomplish that?
Yeah, so we would like to see to build these connections between farmers and their communities and the consumer. That certainly means that we need to have farm subsidies that support family-sized operations and support their rural communities that they're in. And so improving that safety net for family-sized farmers and making sure that those benefits are directed to family-sized operations, having our crop insurance system reflect those values as well. So that's one piece is that big farm program safety net feature. Another piece is the conservation side of it. You know, we are asking our farmers to do more to ensure that we have healthy soils, clean water, and natural resources that are good for everyone. And are we making the investments in the right way so that we can encourage those things in our in the practices that we end up using on the farm? So conservation is a big part of it. And I would argue that we're at a very critical time there as well. You know, we talk about our Iowa waters and
yeah.
our struggles to make sure that they are that we're not sending nutrients into our waters and polluting our waters. What systems are we encouraging with the Farm Bill for farmers to for those practices, and that they can get rewarded for using good practices? Our climate issues need to be addressed through our farming practices as well.
Well, let me ask you about the water situation. Mm-hmm. Since those are rules written at the state level, what can the federal level do to affect that?
Well, so much of the practices that end up helping our water and our natural resources are conservation practices that actually emanate from the USDA and the state. So there's a partnership with mm-hmm. those two things. So, and in fact, we've started building on that partnership. The Inflation Reduction Act that was passed just this past year made the biggest investment in conservation since the Dust Bowl. And are we going to make sure that those investments actually reach the ground so that we see real improvements that farmers can use?
And what were the investments that that bill affected in Iowa?
Yeah, so that will mean that the programs that we use for conservation for the, either they be in conservation stewardship programs and environmental quality incentive programs, all of these existing programs which have a large climate aspect already that farmers are using now on a volunteer basis get an increase in investment. So it's a huge increase in the program, the conservation programs that are put in place. In addition to that, there are new programs to help encourage climate practice, farming practices that will help us mitigate climate change as well. Now, the rules are being written for that right now.
I was just about to ask what that means, right?
Yeah, what does that mean? Well, the rules are being written right now, so we don't know exactly what that is going to
look like. Who's writing those rules?
It'll be the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Okay, so it'll be federal then.
Yes, yeah. Now, we also know that there's that the state's interests in this are very important as well. We have a nutrient reduction strategy that set goals, but very few measurements to see how we are doing meeting those goals. Mm. Are we measuring our water? What progress are we making cleaning up the water? And the investments needed to make a difference from the state have simply been not there in order to make a big enough difference.
And to what do you attribute that?
Well, we have some mechanisms that we could put in place to get there, but we haven't done it yet. You know, over 10 years ago, the state of Iowa passed a constitutional amendment saying the next time we do a sales tax increase, 3/8 of a cent of it is going to go in towards outdoor resources and to ways to help us clean up our waters through in these enhanced farming practices. And the IWL, the Iowa Water and Land Legacy Act. So we've got the structure in place. We just haven't funded it yet. We are long overdue to make that happen. In addition to that, a couple of years ago, the legislature put a water quality piece in place, promising that that was the first step of many steps to come. Well, we haven't taken that second step yet.
This is the Iowa legislature.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So you guys are very active in lobbying them, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Very good. Sounds like we've got more to talk about. The Farm Bill affects us all in many different ways. I want to take this opportunity to remind us that this is KHOI Community Radio. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Here's a little music from the Barn Owl Band. And to stay with our agricultural theme here, that was a tune called Behind the Haystack. We are talking with Aaron Lehman. He's the president of the Iowa Farmers Union. We are talking about the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill. It sounds like such a big thing, and it is a big thing. Aaron, you were talking about the people that come to the table to put the Farm Bill together. A lot of people are interested in this, and we didn't talk too much yet about the influence of the big boys in all of this. There are a lot of lobbyists besides farmers that are speaking to the lawmakers about who exactly gets all these subsidies and who gets what. And it seems I hear that a lot of money goes to really huge farms and really huge industries. How do you deal with that, Aaron?
Well, that is certainly true. And what we do is a number of things. But the first thing we need to think about is directing farm benefits to family-sized operations. You know, there's no rules about the number of acres that a particular farmer can farm. I would argue, and our members argue, that there's no reason we should be subsidizing those after a family-sized operation. No reason we should subsidize someone farming the rest of the half of the county. it's so much better for our rural communities and for our farm economy to have a diverse set of family-sized farmers. So directing farm benefits is really, really important. That's one piece of it. The other thing is we really ought to be doing more to stop the monopolies that control so much of the food system. So those are two things right off the top.
Well, which monopolies do you think are vulnerable?
Well, we have a number of different areas that we have to work on here. To start with, the four largest multinational meat packers control 54% of poultry and even more than that of our red meats. But it goes beyond that. Four firms control 84% of herbicides and pesticides. Three farm tractor manufacturers control 95% of the industry.
Yes, and these are not necessarily American companies either.
No, there most of them are multinational, and some are completely owned from outside the mm-hmm. United States.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and along with that, there's this interesting thing. I live on a small farm myself and have mm-hmm. slightly used equipment, I must say, and small equipment. Mm-hmm. I never thought you'd come across this, but now there is a real push to make it legal for farmers to fix their own equipment. That is a dangerous thing when... Well, dangerous.
Right, you right to repair. It's called.
Right to repair. Is that going to actually happen? I mean, it seems terribly unfair to sell a farmer a tractor, and granted, these are huge, huge, complicated beasts that they are being sold. But one of the things about being a farmer is I always thought was kind of being able to take care of your own, or at least understand what's going on. Is something going to be happening in that vicinity?
Well, we're certainly pushing for the Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission to take action on this. It is not right that when farmers purchase equipment and they're limited on how they can repair their own equipment. Now, there are some things that we know that need to be proprietary in order for manufacturers to stay in business, but the level of control is really out of proportion. You know, when a consumer buys a car or a pickup, they have access to all the information needed in order to repair that themselves. That same information should be available to farmers that want to repair their own combine or tractor.
This seems like very much a very science fiction, Big Brother-y sort of thing. It doesn't sound good at all. But I'm sure that they will figure this out because people do like to hack things, so maybe we can do it that way.
So that would have to come from the Justice Department? That's not a farm bill issue. Or is it?
It's not necessarily. I mean, we do think there ought to be a competition title in the Farm Bill that addresses issues like this. But yes, it is a Department of Justice issue. But we can do better too with the laws that we have. We should strengthen our laws to make it easier for farmers to have access to all the information they need to fix their own equipment.
Ah, very good. I just finished rereading. I don't know why I picked this up. It's kind of a sad tale. I recently reread The Grapes of Wrath, and I thought, that's just a little light reading for the winter and kind of depressing. but I'd forgotten how intense. Well, it was written in the late 30s, for one thing, coming off of a really hard time for farmers. A lot of things have changed, but a lot of discussion besides the day-to-day drama of the of the refugees of the Okies, there's a lot of talk about ag policy and social policy and economic policy in there, but things just weren't working too well back then. And one term that kept popping up throughout the book, yes, this happened during the Dust Bowl. People couldn't make a living on the farm. They left the southern part of the Midwest because the Dust Bowl came. But the term that kept popping up was that these farmers were not Dust Bowled out of their land. They talked about being tractored out of their land. They talked about the big companies even then buying up all these farms at dirt prices again because the prices were so low. And this is the time of big tractors replacing smaller farmers.
And horses even.
And horses. Mm-hmm. And big farmers would come in and with many tractors just plow, as they say, fence row to fence row. And any kind of smaller farmer was just in the way, including tenant farmers, which a lot of these Okies were. So the term tractored out, we have changed a lot in an amazingly short amount of time. And yet this is still these are still the people that we rely on to feed us. It's going to be a really interesting thing to see. One thing that still needs to be done is people need to harvest this stuff. The migrants and the people that work to pick our crops and work in the meat plants and all that kind of thing. That kind of ag policy thing is really, really important. Donna, you said there was something about ag workers?
There's a lot going on, and I'm sure Aaron can fill this in better than me, but that with the sort of immigration crisis that we seem to be having in this country, one thing that we've done by closing down our borders is we've eliminated the ease of farmers obtaining agricultural workers. We need people to mine the dairy cattle and pick the fruits and vegetables and all that kind of thing. And the farmers I have seen in the news are really upset because the agricultural visas are being limited. Or what? Tell us what's going on with that, Aaron.
Yeah, we do see such a need to reform our immigration laws in order to encourage those willing to help us in agriculture, harvest our crops, help plant our crops. And the path for agricultural guest workers is very difficult. And now's really a great time to bring this up, because sometimes there's a lot that happens between election and a new Congress, and sometimes there's not this lame duck session. This is really something that needs to happen now. There's a very good opportunity for, I think the reference is the Farm Workforce Modernization Act. And this is something that is supported up and down the agricultural spectrum, because the situation with agricultural workers is really untenable. It's just not, it's not, there's really not a good way for this to happen under current circumstances. So I'm really hopeful that Congress can act on this now while they have the opportunity.
You mean before the new Congress sits?
Even before the new Congress sits, it's really the time now to make it happen. And we do have support from the Iowa delegation for this to happen. There is some, there's always some backroom politicking that takes place, especially in this lame duck session. So I think there's some big hurdles to overcome in the back room. But as far as the agriculture sector, there's wide agreement that this.
So it's a bipartisan support then.
Yes. They worked through a lot of the complications and issues. I can say confidently that the bipartisan effort to get this done is there. And that if it ever reaches the floor, it will pass. by a wide margin, and in the Senate by a wide margin. Just getting it there on the, you know, they only have so many days when they're working in this interim time. Getting it there is the issue. It needs to get through the backroom negotiations on and get to the floor, but I'm confident it'll pass when it gets there.
Well, now in the when the new Senate and House sits, and of course the House will change dominant parties. What do you think might happen to this a bill like this that is bipartisan? Shouldn't that still be fine in the new Congress?
We think that the opportunity is to do it now. When we have the leadership change, yes, on the ground, I think there's bipartisan support, but the indicators are that the time is now to get the backroom dealing done, and it'll be easier to do now with the current Congress. So
things still might happen before the end of the year, huh?
They still might. We really hope so.
Amazing. Because evidently what happens to the farm bill, even though it happens every 5 years, it affects all of us, and not just farmers. We all are consumers of whatever the farmers produce, and our land, our climate, our economy. It all makes a big difference.
It really does. It really does. And there are lots of things that we should be doing at the state level as well to build those connections between farmers and consumers and the communities that we live in. We have such a wonderful state of abundance. We can be very proud of the abundance that we have. But one thing I like to remind folks is that all the food that we eat in Iowa, less than 15% of that actually comes from Iowa.
Right.
and that's shocking.
Yeah, it is.
And that's probably just pork or something like that.
Well, we do a lot of high fructose corn syrup.
Oh, that's true.
So pork and Coca-Cola.
What is your opinion? Okay, so the House Ag Committee Chairman will be a Republican in the next session. Do you think that will make the very Republican Iowa legislature any more comfortable with moving forward with some of these things that we think need to be done here in Iowa with funding, like, for example, some of the things that you just talked about?
Well, I certainly we're going to urge a lot of cooperation between the two.
Mm-hmm.
We know that we're going to have, especially for the farm bill discussions, we're going to have a bipartisan leadership, right? It certainly appears that we'll have Democrats in charge of the Ag Committee in the Senate, mm-hmm. Republicans in the Ag Committee in the House. But in addition to those things, we have to remember that there are lots of differences regionally when it comes to farm legislation. Southern agriculture interests have not always been perfectly aligned with Midwest agriculture interests. And our things like directing payments to family-sized farms, we have a lot more receptive audience to that with our Midwest agriculture allies than some of our Southern agriculture allies, which traditionally have had larger farm interests kind of dominate the scene. So it's not just partisan stuff that's going on. There's going to be plenty of regional cooperation that's going to be needed.
Is that like because of the cotton lobby, for example? Or
yeah, that's been a big part of it. You hit the nail on the head mm-hmm. with that. Those are important discussions to have. And I've been reminding people, too, you know, we're going to see a little, it appears that we're going to see a different presidential nomination process as well.
That might
shift from the Midwest to the Southeast. One thing that we're really proud of here is that we've been able to have very good discussions about Midwest agriculture values and priorities.
Right, during the primaries, yes.
And we hope that we can that's made a big difference, you know. For instance, you know, we've had the current Secretary of Transportation was in Iowa running for office, and he was going over our country roads and our country bridges. And we were having discussions about rural infrastructure, and now he's the Secretary of Transportation. That's super important. The current budget chair, Bernie Sanders, for the Senate, he was in Iowa talking to farmers face-to-face about farm taxation issues and farm taxation values. That's a really important priority. Our vice president was in Iowa for many, many days talking face-to-face with Iowa farmers and our small-town residents talking about climate issues and how farming and climate practices can work together. Those are really good opportunities, and I think Iowa did a very good job representing itself in that way.
Very good. I want to just mention that this is KHOI, and you're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about fairness for farmers with Aaron Lehman. We've been talking about the farm bill. At the, I heard Ricardo Salvador talk about his work with farming and farm policy in Washington, D.C., and he proposed some new visions for a farm bill, and I haven't really thought about the farm bill that much, but what in the world, whatever in the world our farm bill is funding and promoting now, he proposed some interesting new ideas for all of us to consider. Do you have a few things to say about that, Aaron?
Yeah, you know, he made the argument that that there are sometimes there are farm bills that kind of just continue what was done in the past, and they tend to just make slight tweaks, but they didn't really change the direction of farm policy. But there have been farm bills that have been truly transformational. Farm bills that have expanded what could be done in conservation. Farm bills that have expanded what could be done in hunger prevention, in nutrition. And he made the argument that now is the time for that kind of a transformational farm bill. It is not a status quo situation. It's not time for a status quo farm bill. And that we ought to have a farm bill that is transformational in the ways that it ties together our farms and our natural resources and our rural communities towards common goals that are all working together.
Well, looking at the upcoming compositions of both the Senate and the House Ag Committees, what do you think is possible in terms of transformation?
Well, it's too early to tell exactly, right? We think that the farm bill discussions are going to ramp up, so now is the time for us to get engaged, to talk to our lawmakers, and tell them what we think ought to be emphasized. But I do think that we know that there's some really good room in this next farm bill debate for talking about competition issues and including some anti-monopolistic language, something that can really deal with monopolies in a meaningful way in the farm bill. And in addition to that, there's room for some very significant changes on how agriculture and farmers deal with the climate change crisis and ways that we can incentivize farmers for the good climate practices that they can put in place on their farm. And while building their farm's capacity, building their soil health, and building their rural communities at the same time. So those are two things that I think can be really transformational.
Let me ask you a very specific thing. Now that we have allowed the Chinese to buy the bulk of our pork industry through Smithfield, and a lot of the pigs are grown both in the Carolinas and in Iowa, basically we've become the environmental dumping grounds for the waste products from the CAFOs, and the products are going to China. What can we do about that at this point?
Yeah. Well, trade practices need to be addressed so that our farmers are treated fairly when we do a trade agreement. And that can be addressed in farm bills as well. But in addition to that, when you talked about the environmental impacts, if we have a meat packer, a multinational meat packer that has ties all the way down to the farm, why are they exempt from the consequences of what happens on the farm for their pigs and their pork and their system? They ought to share responsibility for what the impacts are for their operations, rather than passing all the blame to farmers who are on the ground trying to make a living.
Well, legislatively, how could that be made to happen? Like cleanup funds? What are we talking about here?
Well, I think we simply say, that those who are liable need to include more than just the farmer on the ground, but the integrators up the chain, up the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
Too often, our food system is designed so that the products and the profits from those products get sent up the food chain ladder, but all the responsibility for growing are left on the farm with the farmer. And that just doesn't make sense. You can't have a system that disconnects the two. It's not fair for farmers to be the ones left holding the bag. Those are a couple pieces that we can do to...
Well, that would be transformational, yeah. Wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, just even thinking about these connections differently, I guess I remember the fact that this now would be a good time to think differently about farming and the environment and the climate and workers' rights and food mm-hmm. justice for all. It is really all connected. Also, there are other things going on encouraging local producers here in the state of Iowa. And there's hope for city gardens and improving
yes.
food hubs. And there are lots of things going on. Can you give us information on how people can connect up with the Iowa Farmers Union to find out about these things?
Yes. I mean, the easiest way is to go to our website, iowafarmersunion.org. We are in the middle of a membership campaign and a fundraising campaign at the end of the year to build our capacity to organize and to educate. So going to iowafarmersunion.org. I also want to encourage people to take part in the discussion with Iowa Food System Coalition. And they can go online to the Iowa Food System Coalition website and learn about the creation of an Iowa food plan, which is meant to bring more equity and justice and fairness to our Iowa food system. So those are two ways I'd encourage people to get involved.
Well, thank you for being with us today, Aaron. This was great. Found out about fairness for farmers. Aaron Lehman is with the Iowa Farmers Union, a fine group of folks to get to know.
It's been a pleasure being here. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you for all your good work, Aaron.
All right. Have a good day.
Good. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you on KHOI Community Radio every Tuesday at noon, repeated Tuesday at 7 p.m., and we are on KHOI's webpage. You can find old shows there, and we are a podcast. So, we had music today by the Barn Owl Band. Support this fine radio station. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintos.
And engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.